All right. So I'm Bill Holzapfel, and I'm going to talk about fine scaling isotropy observations with Akbar. And this is the these are very preliminary results. If any of you were here 2 years ago, we talked about Akbar and we talked about the prospects for it. And at that time, we had yet to I think during the conference we successfully cooled the receiver for the first time. And we claimed that we were going to actually be observing then in 3 months, and we actually did, but it's been exciting, and I'll just tell you a little bit about some of the first results here. But I'm going to skip over. I'm not going to talk much about why we're interested so much as because of Max did such a great job motivating this. But I'm just going to say that, of course, measuring the power spectrum is a great way of looking at cosmological parameters and beyond. And I also won't talk much about this. I will say a little bit about the damping tail, that out here beyond the first, second, and third peaks, there's some interest in measuring the damping tail of the cosmic microwave background anisotropy. And the reason is that out here we know that the photons diffuse out of these overdense regions in the early universe, and the anisotropy that we observe is exponentially damped, but still the scale of this damping has this nice behavior that we can essentially use it as a standard, if not a standard rod, at least a standardizable rod. And there's some very strong dependencies on cosmological parameters that the baryons essentially pen in these photons into these anisotropies and into these overdensities, and the higher the density of baryons, the damping tail moves out to slightly smaller scale, and also if there's a lot of matter in the universe that the universe is a little bit older at the time of recombination. And the tail moves to slightly larger scales or lower L, and so it turns out that we can place very strong constraints on omega matter or omega baryon by measuring the damping tail of the CMB, and as well by measuring measuring anisotropies over a large range and angular scales, we can place very very nice constraints on spectral index. So in terms of cosmological parameters, these high L measurements that we're making will really be interesting for omega baryon and omega matter and for the spectral index. There are also secondary anisotropies, which I'm going to talk about some tomorrow actually, but let it be known that out here around L of 2000 or so, that secondary anisotropies will be expected to dominate over the primary anisotropies that we see, and so that's a whole other interesting set of information that we'll gain from those. Okay, we'll start off by motivating things. That is sort of the present state of the art, and Tony Reedhead will talk about this in just a minute, so I don't want to spend too much time. But we've got a lot of very precise measurements down here at large angular scales, and out here at L of around 1,000. You can see that really out beyond that, it's really dominated by CBI. And this is the CBI mosaic data. This is precisely out in that region where Akbar will really be weighing in. Now, in the future, of course, as Max said, MAP will produce precise measurements of the CMB and isotropy on these larger angular scales, all the way down out here to around L of 1,000, where it really stops being effective due to finite beam size. Now, Planck will go considerably farther, but of course, Planck is some ways off still. Of course, MAP is taking data and analyzing data at this point. And Planck is... Planck is still a ways off from actually gathering results. So really, what we're going to have is a situation where there will be MAP will produce data on a short time scale, and then out beyond that there will be CBI and there will be Akbar, and we'll really be left to measure these fine angular scale fluctuations. So Akbar stands for the Archimedic Cosmology Bolometer A Receiver. And it's an anarchist collective of people led primarily by co-PIs myself and John Rule, And so just so, and with involvement from Caltech, CMU, Peter Ade at Queen Mary College, and of course primarily Matt Newcomb, who's actually our winner over. I'll talk a little bit about some of the details of that. So the color scheme here, blue are undergraduates, purple are postdocs, and red are the graduate students. And these four guys, Sheldon Kuo is in the audience today, Mike Daub, Marcus Runyon at Caltech, John Goldstein at Santa Barbara, these four guys are the ones who have really made this project work. And they've done a ton of work to get things going on the fast time scale. We were about 2 years from conception, well, actually under 2 years from conception to deployment. So there's another version of that picture, but we'll save it. So one of the things with ACBAR is we want to measure, of course, CMB anisotropies with the highest precision, but we want to do that in the presence of foregrounds. And so we've got all these, you know, we've got synchrotron emission, free emission, radio point sources, dust emission. We've got all these things that are going to try to confuse us when we measure CMB anisotropies. And up in this region here, in the white, where we expect to be reasonably free of foregrounds, this pushes up a little bit higher if you go to regions of the lowest dust. So you can really, this is really a nice sweet spot to be, is where we've selected the bands for ACBAR. And just, you know, ACBAR has broad frequency coverage. It goes, we had four bands. We're actually only observing with three bands now, but we're going from 150 gigahertz to 274 gigahertz. And the idea is that gives us a very good, very large range of frequencies, very good lever arm on dust emission, and which is our primary primary source of confusion. Now, I won't say much about this, but in the regions we've selected, the dust contrast is very low. And it's completely insignificant. It's two orders of magnitude lower than the power we measure. So it's not an issue at all. And so this is just to get, you know, an idea, is that it turns out that from the South Pole, there's a very nice region of sky overhead. And Top Hat has made use of looking at that, Boomerang, the early Python experiments. I don't have all the daisy fields on here, but the daisy fields span this region down here. And ACBAR has selected fields in this region as well. And part of our, I'll talk a little bit more about this in a bit, but one of the things that we've done is we actually did something that might sound a little counterintuitive, but we selected fields with bright quasars in our fields. And so we always pop a bright quasar right in the middle of our field. Oh, boy. And the reason we do that is to attempt to monitor a pointing precisely. We really want to understand that quasar should look like a point source, and if it does, then we actually have our pointing fairly well understood. Okay, so we observe from the South Pole, and why do we observe from the South Pole? Well, it turns out this is a measurement of fluctuations in sky temperature from the South Pole versus high in Chile, where CBI would be observing, Mauna Kea, where SUSY would be observing, and you can see that the stability of the polar atmosphere is really what gets us down there. In the winter, we can get down to below 200 microns of precipitable water vapor at the South Pole. The atmosphere can't hold much water vapor at minus 100 Fahrenheit, and becomes very transparent. Again, another measurement of the quality of the site, just showing the precipitable water vapor. But really, the South Pole is really a great site, and I don't think we could do this experiment elsewhere. ACBAR's got four bands. We observe here. Here is shown the Sanyazo-Dobich effect thermal effect signature, and here either the kinematic signature or a primary CMB anisotropy. And here we have a 150 gigahertz band, 219 gigahertz band, 274 gigahertz band. Originally we had a 345 gigahertz band. These are measured pass bands for our instrument. And originally we had a 345 gigahertz pass band, but we removed it because it was largely corrupted by atmosphere. And here you can see the atmospheric transmission for those bands at the South Pole. Try to make some space here. So we use silicon nitride micromesh bolometers, which were fabricated for us at JPL by Jamie Bach and Andrew Lang, and these we have great optical efficiency, about 40% in our 150 gigahertz bands, which is for the gearheads out there, that is very very exciting, And we run the, well, I won't go into that in detail. You saw the filter bands. I won't say that much about it. That's one of the things we spent a lot of time on, is really making those filter bands as precise as possible, so that we really understand our response to the signals we're looking for, and our confusion or contamination due to atmosphere is really minimal. Here's another view where we have the horns that concentrate the light coming down. We essentially go through a stack of filters. We come down into the detectors here. We have some low noise preamplifiers here. This is our refrigerator, which is a pumped helium-3, helium-3, helium-4 three-stage refrigerator. If anyone has any interest in that, I'll tell you about it. But it cools to about 230 millikelvin and has a hold time about 36 hours. And so there's the receiver as it was configured for the 2002 season, which you saw previously was 2001. In 2002, we added a second row of 150 gigahertz horns. And we doubled our number of 150 gigahertz horns and increased the sensitivity, and just to really go after primary anisotropies. So I won't say anything more about the cryogenics, except to say that this 36-hour hold time we get is, the refrigerator automatically cycles, we get about 90% duty cycle. So it's really quite nice. Some overbuilt electronics boxes survive the harsh environment down there. A little bit about sensitivities for those of you who are interested in them. At NET for CMB at 150 gigahertz, we're about 280 microkelvin. That's slightly more than Boomerang gets at float, but it's comparable. And so the fact of the matter is that's what we're getting on the ground with this instrument, and we have several months of observing time. So we're amassing quite a nice data set. I just have some little photo show of actually we did some service on the telescope in 2001. And here it is. Here's the actual two to 3 meter Viper telescope getting lowered into place. There's Akbar loaded on the telescope, ready for observation. And there's our Stallworth Matt Newcomb filling helium in the dead of winter, which is pretty exciting. Okay. So here's a map of the beams we made in 2001 looking at Mars. And here we have our 150 gigahertz, 219, 274, 345. We had some problems with a 345 band for a number of reasons, due to surface accuracy, the telescope, and other things, and our beams weren't quite what we expected. So we scrapped that band, and we put another row of 150 gigahertz channels in here for the next year. So here's just observing a galactic, essentially an H2 region that we see in the galaxy, and with all the channels, just to show you that they're all working. This is a fairly quick raster over this bright source. And here's an infrared image to show, just give you motivate the structure we see. Here's one of our fields where 150 gigahertz, and this is 219, 150, 150, 274, and at 150 gigahertz, we see the quasar quite bright. Its flux is falling off as we go to higher frequency, and we don't see it at 274 or 219. You can if you integrate long enough, but it's fairly faint. Anyway, just an idea that just to show you what things look like for one of our CMB rasters. This is one of our maps made with, now this is several hundred hours of integration made in 2001. This is 10 square degrees with an RMS of about 13 microkelvin in a 5 arc minute beam. And so, and then this is at 150 gigahertz. And then in that year, the 270 or 219 gigahertz row was offset by a quarter degree. So I'm going to show you the 219 map, and you'll see this all move over, all the structure move over a bit. And that's essentially just because there's a slight offset between the rows and the focal plane. But basically, the same structure is all there. This is our deepest map we just completed making. It's about 6 square degrees with an RMS of 6 microkelvin in a 5 arc minute beam. And we went this deep to try to go after, to really go out to high L and go to the very small angular scales. We wanted to go as deep as was reasonably possible. And so this is sort of the state of the art for the Akbar data. We're going to be producing a few more maps in the season, but this is really where the bulk of our high L results are going to come from. This is a simulated Akbar power spectrum. I'm not going to show you the real power spectrum today, but this is taking that map and taking the real map noise in that map and assuming that the sky is lambda CDM. So basically it says just the noise in the map is what we measured, but then replace it with a realization of lambda CDM. And for that single field, this is what you get. So a lot of you will ask, you'll see, it's a shame that I'm going before Tony, but you'll see that the CBI point out here, this is from the CBI deep field, shows an excess out here, essentially, you know, on the same plot. Now the thing is, if it's it depends what the source is, what our sensitivity to it would be. If it was CMB, it would be here, and you know, at our point, I'm not going to say it's here or where it is because this is the simulated data, right? But the point is that if we fell on this curve, there would be some difference. But if their point is actually due to SZ, we're less sensitive to Sanyaev-Zeldovich effect than the CBI result or the system is at 30 gigahertz comparative to primary anisotropy, and that's where the CBI point would lie. So maybe a more appropriate thing to do would be to put one of our points up at that point and say, well, could we tell the difference from this curve? And you'd say, well, barely, right? And so, but if we've been a little larger and a little deeper integration, it's quite reasonable that we could do this. So spectral discrimination of SZ from CMB is perfectly reasonable and within reach. It's not going to be easy, but it we should be able to do it. Almost there. One last thing we're doing is we're looking for clusters. We're searching for Sanyaev-Zeldovich clusters, trying to identify individual clusters in these fields. This is that same field that I showed you, but now we filtered it with an optimal map. We've filtered it with an optimal filter to remove CMB fluctuations. And what you see is the RMS in this is now about 4 microkelvin in a 5 arc minute beam. And if you plot up the statistics, there's some actually fairly interesting decrements in here. And we're right now coordinating follow-up observations to look at these and see if any of them are in fact due to SZ clusters that are in the field. At the sensitivity we're at in the sky coverage, you do expect several. And so we expect to be able to place some very interesting results on, and I'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow in terms of cluster searching, but we expect to be able to place some very interesting constraints on cosmological parameters through studying the presence of clusters in these fields or by searching for them. One last thing, of course, sorry. We're doing pointed observations of clusters. But in order to do that for some large clusters, we have to do spectral subtraction. So this is 150 gigahertz, 220, 275, and a spectrally subtracted image. These contours are the X-ray for this given cluster. Okay, so that's where I'll stop. But so Akbar is in the middle of its second year of observation. The instrument's meeting all its specifications. It's working great. We've got right now about 20 degrees of lead, main, trail, different sky, and I can talk about the details of the observation strategy if anyone's interested. We have deep pointed observations of about 4 clusters right now, and we've got analysis of power spectrum, the pointed observations, and SZ cluster searching is all in progress right now. We expect power spectrum results shortly, and we've got about 5 weeks now until sunrise. The system is we have helium enough to run the system all the way through station opening. So we expect to gather a bit more of this good data. We're funded for 6 more months of observation in 2003, and we have a renewal for an additional year of observation pending. And so we'd like to see that go forward. And what we plan to do in the future is we really would like to increase our sensitivity at 220 gigahertz and beef up those observations and really try to do a nice clean spectral discrimination of the CBI excess. That's something we'd really like to do. And we'd also like to do increasing our spectral discrimination would help with our deep cluster searching because right now we're confused by CMB anisotropies. Residual CMB anisotropies at small angular scales actually limit our sensitivity to be able to search for clusters. So we really need a little bit better spectral information. And we'd like to complete our survey of X-ray luminous clusters. We'll do that. We'll work on that once the sun rises in a couple weeks. So And finally, we'd like to do some nice constraints on CMB foregrounds. We're making incredibly deep maps. We can do some very nice work on dust and other sources of foregrounds, which will be great for upcoming Planck missions. So anyway, so that's where we stand. But that is all. So. Sorry, I ran over there. But,
it's okay. We're now running late, and I've been informed by the organizers that we're missing the wrap of the papers. So maybe we want to keep this nice and short, so people can talk to Bill and discuss in the break.
Okay.
Well, Bill?
One question, Bill. Since you're on the atmosphere, is a very interesting one, of course, with the Germanic data.
Yes.
And then you made a reference. And the latitude, in fact, pointed out there wasn't much difference. Again, if you were to plot equivalent data in terms of this is the water that you find, where's the range between the two?
Between the two, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Oh,
yes, yes, the going up into that band, yes, certainly.
Therefore, the difference cannot be, you cannot neatly say that because the 350 micron, different data, say 35 kilometers, radically different than it is at South Pole and Mauna Kea, and therefore the data at 200 gigahertz scales comparably does not.
Yes.
And so the point is that one cannot make a direct comparison between sites by looking at 350 micron data as to what the site would be at 200 gigahertz.
No, certainly. And there's different, I mean, if you're referring to the fact that there's dry air opacity versus that due to water vapor, this is fluctuations, though. And so in some sense, this should be a fairly a good indication of what the water vapor is doing in the atmosphere.
Obviously, the quality of the site depends on, you know, for a given observation, depends on the observation you want to do, and that's a function of angular scale, as well as frequency.
That's right.
Keep listing one quantity, the point being that yeah, you can try and figure out. The fact is that at the pole, atmosphere is starting to come in to the aquifer noise thing, whereas obviously on the balloon, it's not a factor at all.
Right. So, no, I can go in. We can talk in detail. Atmosphere is an issue, and it's comparable to our detector noise. And we have to do a lot of work to actually account for it properly in the analysis, and that makes the analysis difficult. But
it also reduces the sensitivity of the signal.
That's right. Yeah. We've discussed it, and pending availability of detectors, it depends a lot upon fabrication of detectors. We've discussed it, and it is still on the table, and we're discussing it actively. So it's a question of there are a lot of projects right now, and there are only so many foundries for detectors, and it's an issue. I think it's so long as we're still doing interesting thing work with the cluster searching and primary anisotropy mapping. I think we'll continue at least for the next 6 months doing this. But then in a year from now, polarization detectors would be welcome. So,
okay, maybe let's wrap it up here.
Okay.
Again.
All right.